I remember
Yeah, and I didn't really
I
care for it.
specifically remember I'm gonna paint a tableau for you that I was listening to. I guess it was probably the comics podcast because that's the only time I've ever listened to a podcast with John Luke on it. And I was listening to an episode of the comics podcast, and I was like shopping in a craft store, and John Luke said something about about Danger Days being like one of his top MCR albums, and I was just like, yeah, finally, somebody gets it.
It is my favorite MCR album,
That was
yeah.
probably what you said, yeah.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to ascribe favorite if it wasn't, and I misremembered.
Yeah, no. It is. It is my favorite. No, is like a
I
week
used
for
to,
it,
I had
but
a homemade shirt that I had a shirt that I made in high school with like fabric paint, and it had a little like it had a Batman head at the bottom, like a little silhouette Batman head, and it said like remember when you were a madman when you was Batman or whatever the fuck that lyric is. Yeah.
Alex, how long have we been recording?
Party in the trash can. Da 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 da
Have we
da.
been,
One
are we
minute and
recording?
38 seconds.
I think he hit record when Chad started
Oh,
his
nice.
when Chad started to deliver his My Chemical Romance
Alex, you're a
opinions.
piece of shit.
Hi, Chad. Nice to see you. I missed last week and it made me sad. But,
I was so sad that you were gone. We talked about so many comics.
Yeah, there's so many this week too, but we won't get there for a while.
Are we like in the episode, or is
I mean,
this
you have to do the intro.
Jean-Luc? The episode never ends. Like you might stop recording, but this is life is but one big episode.
That's kind of a terrif life is one big episode. Damn. I can't do the podcast night anymore. I have to go think about that for the rest
That's
of my
fair.
night.
That's fair.
Anyway, hello and welcome. You are listening to episode the 248th. That's not, yeah, I was right. Of the internet's one and only podcast about comic books, My Chemical Romance, always comic relevant. You know,
Yeah.
there's comics associated with My Chemical Romance. I would say
There's comics
all of.
associated with My Chemical Romance. There's comics associated with the lead singer of My Chemical
Gerard
Romance.
Curds
There's
and
so many
Whey.
comics.
I would say of the comics that I've read that were written by members of bands that I enjoy, Gerard Way's are by far the best.
Did you read any of the Max Bemis comics? I have not read
Yeah,
any.
I've read some of the Max Bemis stuff.
How did that?
It's
How was that?
fine.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I read. I know I read it. I don't even really remember what he wrote. It didn't really. It was like I remember it was Marvel stuff,
Sure, yeah.
but it didn't leave like a strong impression on me or
I mean,
anything.
that's fine.
Trying. I wish that I knew off the top of my head, but yes,
I was
I did
gonna say,
read
I'm just
some.
curious.
I've read. You know, there are a couple other ones. Lots of people like to, you know, write comics as their vanity
They
project.
should stop.
I was gonna say Kevin Smith, but then I remember that Kevin Smith isn't like a musician, he's a director. Kevin Smith's comics were actually pretty good. His Green Arrow.
I the only Kevin Smith comic that I have read is the Batman comic, The Widening Gyre, and from what I remember about that comic, if I tried to reread it now, I don't think that I would enjoy it as much as I did when I was in high school.
So I haven't read that, or I don't remember what the name of his Green Arrow stuff was.
The literal only thing I remember about The Widening Gyre is that there's like some quip from like a woman who is sleeping with Bruce Wayne, and I don't even remember who the fuck she is, and she says that like he made her come like 10 times or
Yeah,
something.
it's Silver St. Cloud, I think,
Yeah,
at that
it
point.
is. I remember the name Saint Cloud, so
I like the
yes.
idea of he paid like his tech guy to make a really good sex toy because he can't do it himself. And he's like, "Hey, Morgan Freeman, I need you to make me the best sex toy. I am the Batman." And it's just like a dildo with like bat wings on it.
That's great.
Yeah.
How come I don't write Batman comics?
I think,
Chad,
I think
we keep telling you that you should write Batman comics, and you keep not writing Batman
comics.
Suck
my ass, Tom King. I almost called him Tom Snyder, but it really, they're the Tom's same person.
Oh. The one that I remember the most from Kevin Smith is Batman Cacophony, which was a 3-issue story arc that he wrote that I remember kind of liking, but being like widely hated because of the way that it sort of stages the relationship between Batman and the Joker. Like it's like one of those stories that I probably like The Widening Gyre. If I read it now, I wouldn't like it very much. I would think it was kind of bad because it's like one of those stories about, oh, should Batman kill the Joker, or like, is Batman on the hook if he just lets the Joker die? Because like, it's about some other villains. I think Deadshot is one of them. Maybe I think Maxi Zeus is in it. And like, they're trying to kill the Joker. And then Batman like can't kill the Joker because the like heavy undertones is that the Batman can't kill the Joker because he's in love with the Joker. Which people obviously, you know, I would need to reread it. I would need to reread it to actually like figure out if it was a good take on that relationship. But I remember reading it and thinking that people just hated it because they hated the idea that Batman and the Joker were in love with each other.
And those people are wrong.
And then all those people, well, I think those people probably would also hate the Lego Batman movie. But maybe they didn't. Maybe they liked it by then. Maybe
if anyone doesn't like the Lego Batman movie, fuck off.
Yeah.
The Lego Batman movie is the best Batman movie that has ever been made.
Have you seen the Adam West Batman movie? Because that one's pretty great.
He punches a shark.
I mean, yeah, like I've watched some Adam West Batman, but like Lego Batman.
No, Lego so Batman good. Is like technically better, but I got a soft spot for Adam West Batman.
Well, Lego Batman's just not realistic, unlike the Adam West show.
That's true.
I, similarly to Chad, prefer my Batman a bit more mature.
Thank you, Alex.
A bit more battle.
And that's why you own a physical copy of Batman Damned.
You one physical copy? Jean-Luc, I'm putting my kids who don't exist through college, man.
You're a responsible not parent.
Yeah. And like by my kids, I mean like, oh, I don't know. Maybe I'll send a copy to Chad one day so he can burn it. I don't know.
Oh, I was the only one who thought that was funny. Fuck all of you. Anybody else?
Wait, say the joke again. I don't think I got it.
It's fine. Anybody else been drinking but me? Cause...
No, wait, hold on. I didn't even hear the joke.
Say the line.
So I was hoping that you would repeat it for John.
Wow, don't even pay attention on the podcast.
No, my audio blipped out. I was trying to cover it up.
Well, it looks like someone's going to have to listen to this when it gets posted.
I'm not going to do that.
I know. That's why it's funny.
Look, I have to listen to my own voice enough when I am editing my own podcast. You think I want to listen to it, like, for free for this?
No.
Okay, then.
Everybody hates their own voice. It's just how the world works. But we're going to do...
John likes his own voice.
Yeah, he's an asshole.
John likes hearing himself talk.
I don't like my own voice. What?
We talked about
when that. Did I say that?
No, I'm just picking on you.
Oh,
I want to start a coffee table book called Reasons God Doesn't Exist and just like be like, everyone hates their own voice because it's true. Like that would make money as a coffee table book.
I mean, what else would be in
you
the
have
book?
One page. You have one page. What else you got, Chad?
When you become an adult, you can eat ice cream for supper, but you don't want to because it will make you fat.
Yeah, you know, actually, that's the strongest proof of God that I think I can imagine.
See, my issue isn't that. My issue is, like, I eat ice cream, then my stomach's like,
ha ha ha. Well, Alex, not all of us can be gorgeous.
Yeah, fuck you, Alex, you pretty boy piece of shit.
You're all gorgeous.
My cat doesn't like cheesecake ice cream, I found out.
I feel like you should have, like, saved that portion and we could have done like an ice cream review.
Oh, I wasn't gonna go get it. But
I know, I was just saying, like,
the cat or the ice cream?
No, well, I mean both. I did eat some Ben and Jerry's cheesecake ice cream, and then like the cat was like, "Hey, what's that?" I was like, "You can lick the spoon, buddy." And he did, and he looked at me like I was the worst person. It's like, what the fuck, cat? I didn't betray you. The flavors did. Also, it's good, so fuck you.
Do you guys all like cheesecake? Is that
I love cheesecake.
Cheesecake is great.
Ripley's just wrong.
I remember why I took last week off again.
You don't like cheesecake?
I'll come back. No, I like cheese and I like cake, but you put them together and you make cheesecake.
God damn.
I like cheesecake. I know.
I don't understand.
You're less
the
pretty.
Cheesecake people.
To me.
Yeah, that's fair.
You. I don't want to say that it's just because you've never had good cheesecake, but
I have tried cheesecake on many a time and at many a place where people who consider themselves to be fans of cheesecake are like, "Oh my god, this cheesecake is so good." I mean, like, you know, the Cheesecake Factory is a place.
Yeah, that chain store, I'm sure, has the best.
Oh, well, you know what? They're called the Cheesecake Factory, so they have to make one cheesecake. one okay cheesecake.
The thing with the Cheesecake Factory cheesecakes, and I am, you know, generally a proponent of the Cheesecake Factory. Their cheesecakes are too complex. That's the problem. There's like usually too much going on in them. You gotta strip it back to basics.
Well, see, and I've also gotten tricked sometimes, like, oh, like I'm at a birthday or something. You know? There's a cake there. I'm like, oh, is that vanilla frosting on that cake? Oh, what a lovely, lovely surprise. And then it's cheese. And it's like, I didn't ask for cheese. It was not labeled as cheese.
It's not cheese. And it's cream cheese, Alex. But,
yeah.
Oh, I hate cream cheese on cake.
Cream cheese frosting isn't the same as cheesecake.
No, like, I don't.
Or even cream cheese.
These are two separate cheese and cake related instances. One is just like, hey, I don't like them.
But
together.
Cream cheese but frosting one... doesn't really taste like cream cheese. It's not like they just put a slab of like cream cheese on top of a cake.
It tastes so off to me. It's like, why?
Do you like cream cheese?
It's like, are Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus, like, do they hang out together? No, they don't because
they can't because they're the same person.
Yeah, cream cheese can do what it wants. Do you like cream cheese,
Hannah?
Alex?
And Miley?
You're allowed to not like things. Honestly, when it comes to like...
I do like cream cheese.
Okay, well, there you go.
But anyway, go ahead.
No, it doesn't matter anymore. We did it. We made it. We're here.
You're allowed to not like things, but when you don't like things I like, I will berate you for it.
Well, that's the thing. But I like cream cheese. It's good.
Jean-Luc, I think I owe you an apology about the Star Wars garbage.
Wow.
I saw some GIFs this morning of like an animated Star Wars cartoon, and there was someone with a double lightsaber that was blue killing some stuff, and it looked really cool. And I was like, "Oh fuck, I think I owe Jean-Luc an apology." Like, I'm not going to
watch
it,
that.
But
it'd be fun. Or maybe we can do it for an episode, like a watch along. We've never done a watch along, but like that Clone Wars animated show is so good.
Was that Clone Wars? Because it looked newer.
Oh, then I'm not sure. What I'm talking about is they recently put the like old the guy who made Samurai Jack. He did a Tarantino. He did two Star Wars Clone Wars things way before the animated series came out, and they're really fun, really really fun.
I like the idea of Tarantino doing a Jabba the Hutt movie just so we could see Jabba the Hutt's feet.
Jabba the Hutt's don't have feet.
Well,
way to ruin that joke, Jean-Luc.
Well, you could have picked a character that has feet.
The funny thing is he doesn't have fucking feet. That's why it's funny.
That's why I'm laughing.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars is cool. Like,
I mean, it's
cool
not, but
Star Wars.
The gif I saw this morning.
Here's the thing is cool. Is like I've been in my feelings about Star Wars the last couple weeks, and it's really kind of fucked up
how
much I like Star Wars.
Yeah, he has.
It's kind of fucked up that I like it so much. And you know what? Even though like I just came to terms with the fact that like some of that shit sucks, but it still kind of rocks in a way, you know? Like The Mandalorian is pretty fucking awful, but in some ways it's
The Mandalorian's fine, you piece of shit.
I'm saying I'm saying that I even though like I didn't like it and I think it's not like great, you know what? There's a part of me that likes it. It's part of me. There's a part of me deep down that thinks the Mandalorian.
Where are the Star Wars tweets? I'm looking through John Luke's feed.
Yeah, I haven't found.
Trying to find that.
There weren't Star Wars tweets.
Because it was in a thread like, "Wait, what lightsaber do you want?" And I said, "I want a single lightsaber that's purple because I'm a basic bitch."
Yeah.
I mean, no.
I mean, didn't Samuel L. Jackson get a purple lightsaber just because he wanted a purple lightsaber? Oh,
fuck a Mace Windu.
Yeah.
I know that guy. I brought up Star Wars. This is my fault, everybody.
Check. This isn't even the first time, man.
There wasn't even a Star Wars comic this week, you know? Like, it's...
Where the fuck is that?
Oh, there was, actually. There was a Bounty Hunters number 11.
Here it is.
You're not reading that, right?
Oh, no. God, no. But I mean,
I feel like I read the first couple issues of that and it was terrible.
Yeah. But
am I wrong?
It was a weird series where like it was this bounty hunter and he's trying to kill Darth Vader or something. And it's like,
this is
a 4-issue miniseries and it'll be
fun. Now it's like it's the hunt for Han Solo. Oh, that's Bastila Shan. Bastila Shan. Have you never seen the CG trailers they made for the Old Republic, Chad?
No, is that what this is from?
Oh, yeah.
There's three of them. They're like 5 minutes each. If you have like 15 minutes to kill, they're pretty entertaining.
Is she married? Is my follow-up question.
She's divorced. It's complicated.
I'm fine with that. We can make that work, everybody. We're good.
I make that work.
Yay.
She has a kid, but you know.
A lot less attractive now.
Yeah. Chad and I both just were like,
The kid is an adult and they don't really have a great relationship.
So okay, I'm back on board.
You probably wouldn't see him very much.
Look, I'm fine with a kid that is older than, like, I was going to say 18, but I don't know how it counts in the Star Wars universe. So, like,
yikes.
Not a child anymore. I'm fine with that.
Well, it depends on who you ask in the Star Wars universe,
That's fair. And it also depends on the species, I guess.
It does. Species age differently. Baby Yoda's Grogu is 50 years old.
Yep. He's a creep.
Do you ever think we kind of suck? Like, I'm listening to what we're saying right now, and it's like, oh, man.
Well,
you're
recording this episode, so you don't have to listen to this.
I'm sorry.
I will swipe left on any woman who says that she is a mother, and I will not be made to feel sorry for that.
You're married.
Yes, and?
Fair.
I have a Chad bold new concept to introduce you to, which is called polyamory.
Hey, no, there's a Breaking Benjamin song about that. I'm very aware. The radio.
Hold on, what?
Way to educate the
youth.
It's on their first album.
Really?
Literally called Polyamorous.
Literally never, like, I've listened to, I've seen Breaking Benjamin live.
They play that one live. That's like where I've heard it.
They do.
Realistically, when I saw Breaking Benjamin, I probably would not have heard this song. So, even if they played it when I saw them live, that doesn't mean I would, like, know what's going on.
That's fair. It's a pretty good song. I think it's one of the better Breaking Benjamin songs.
Their best song is when they play like the Star Wars theme and the guy swings around a red lightsaber.
I like Diary of Jane.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. This was the Star Wars tweet that I saw and that lived in mine and Emily's collective consciousness. It was that old guy from the movie Tangled. He's got all the swords in his face, right? And someone tweets, "Which Star Wars opinion puts you in this situation?" Meaning a situation that would be maybe, you know, unpopular with masses, right? And so Jean-Luc tweets, "Star Wars fucking rules." Cuz it does.
Wait, and Emily, do you actually like Hunter x Hunter?
Yeah.
Have you not bitched about this? Because that anime is mediocre as fuck.
Look, I know we've talked about this.
Okay.
Like, I know that you don't care for Hunter.
It has really severe problems.
And that I think that it is extremely good.
The narrator ruins literally 20 episodes in a row.
I'm not going to lie that, like, the narrator isn't maybe the best, but, like, I like the story. I like the characters. Like,
both of those things are fine. The execution is rough.
Here's the thing. If a show gives me good characters, I'm like extremely willing to put up with a bunch of bullshit.
Hisoka and Merum are like some of the best anime villains, and then Akio is like the third. So like,
I hate Hisoka, so that tracks. Everybody go, it's not going to be out yet, but go check out the Patreon for my Usuna podcast and sign up for the merch tier so that you can get an Akio Otori Haters Club pin.
But I love him. He's got a cool car.
But, I mean, do you not also hate him while you love him?
Yeah, like, kind of. He's not great. Also, if you want to fly over and beat me up but we can hang out, like, I'd be fine with that.
I will beat you up and we can hang out.
We'll get Midwest drunk.
This conversation brought to you by, I posted about my birthday is next week and I wanted a Hunter pajama set that Hot Topic is selling. And Chad said that the anime was mediocre, and I said I was going to fly to the Midwest to beat him up because I'm vaccinated now.
Are you fully vaccinated?
I am.
Wow.
I got the Pfizer vaccine, and I am like, I'm actually probably a month out from my second shot, so I'm like 100%. I've got the antibodies and everything.
Yay. Oh, fun thing in my neck of the woods.
I've heard about 15 people have gotten vaccinated in Canada, so.
Yeah, it's about that. But today our wonderful premier, so like kind of a governor or whoever runs a state.
Oh, Doug Ford.
Dougie Ford.
My favorite Canadian politician.
So what do you guys think of giving police more power?
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds good.
Yeah, so totally so now good. Now, in order to stop the, to stop the spread of the lockdown, of COVID, because it's getting to like 4,000 cases a day here, he's saying that police can stop you at any time for any reason and ask you where you live, and ask you where you're going, and because you're not supposed to leave your house, kind of thing. So they're heavily enforcing this lockdown.
I have actually heard of this, and I also heard that, like, I have a friend that lives in Alex, I don't remember where you live, but I have a friend that lives in British Columbia, and she said that, like, she faces, like, she lives near where there are a whole bunch of, like, anti-lockdown protests, even though there hasn't been any sort of actual lockdown.
Yeah, BC has, like, they were basically open up until, like, I'd say a month ago, like, for the whole COVID, because they didn't have a lot of cases.
Yeah.
We in Ontario have been locked down since December, and it just got in, like, more and more, so. Yeah.
Didn't they lift it and then put it back into place 2 weeks later?
We were down to 100 cases a day, or no, under 100 cases a day in, the like, September, and then
opened.
Our leadership was like, it's all good now.
That happened here set. Too.
Let's do it. Yeah.
It's depressing.
So right now, originally it was a 4-week new lockdown kind of thing, which I think we're a week or two in, and it's been added 2 more weeks, but there's been no like, hey, we're going to give people money, or like, hey, we're going to make sure that essential workers or people who are like working at a grocery store like get to stay home and actually like we're going to stop things, so.
Yeah. Also, anyway. Slight correction. Doug Ford is not my favorite Canadian politician. I was thinking of his brother, Rob Ford.
Yes, of course.
The dead guy?
Rob Ford.
The mayor of Cracktown?
He liked cocaine.
Very, very cool guy. Love that guy.
I would like to say that I have, over the course of this time, been slowly parsing through the lyrics of Polyamorous by Breaking Benjamin. And there's not really anything about polyamory in this song except for the word, my polyamorous friend.
It's got me in a mess of trouble again. You infer what happened.
I mean, I guess, but like, but what? Like
the fucking
okay, yeah, but like anyway, I'm not gonna
I answered the question.
I don't feel like you sufficiently answered the question.
Thanks for answering.
He has a friend who's polyamorous. They had sex with each other, and it became drama.
Yeah, but like
game drama.
It doesn't really say what the drama is.
Well,
it just
you have to listen to the rest of Breaking Benjamin's discography backwards to get you know the solution to the to the question. Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah,
we did it. We solved it.
Yay! We broke Benjamin. That's great.
I have to tell you something.
Uh oh.
Oh boy.
So I feel like last week. Did I tell you guys about the cat game that I've been playing?
Yes.
Yes.
Playing Word okay. Cats.
I found out. Game. Yes, Chad, that's very relevant because I found out that the creator and like all like because the game was almost entirely coded by like this one guy. I found out that this game started out as a Warrior Cats fan game. And then became like its own thing and then put out for release. And while that seems very obvious, I just assumed that this was a game heavily inspired by Warrior Cats. I did not know that there was an original version of this game that was a Warrior Cats game, and then they like improved upon it and retooled it to be its own thing, and that's very funny to me.
The more you now know.
I watched a YouTube video about the Warrior Cats fandom that came out last week, and it was really good.
You know, I think you really have to convince Chad to like do a weekly or bi-weekly Warrior Cats lore episode where you...
I feel like a monthly Warrior Cats lore episode would be really good for this podcast.
Do I have to edit every one of them? Because...
Yes.
See,
but you forfeit your responsibility to have to edit this podcast.
Oh, hell yeah.
Wait, whoa,
hold on.
I
did the move real quick there, and it fucking worked out real good for me.
No.
Today I found out something pretty mind-blowing for myself.
I would love to hear.
So you guys know the show Scooby-Doo?
I'm aware.
Stars a dog.
I've heard of it.
Started in the
60s. I've never seen it, but I've...
No, it's okay. No, it's a bit niche, but it's gaining steam. right. I'm a big Scooby-Doo fan. I love watching the original shows. They just bring me a lot of joy. But apparently, so something that I always wanted is them to, like, do episodes in the style of the classic episodes, but give me new episodes because I've seen all the classic episodes.
Hmm.
So, you know, that kind of thing. And apparently that's actually... currently happening on they're on their third season of it, and it's called Scooby-Doo and Guess Who, which is like similar to what they used to do in the old days where they team up with like the Globetrotters or Batman and Robin, but it's in like the classic art style, and I haven't seen anything yet, and I just learned about it today, and I'm just very, very excited.
Have you watched any of it yet or no?
I haven't like literally like 20 minutes before this episode I was like, Scooby-Doo, like I saw something on Twitter and then I googled and it's like, oh, there's 49 episodes that are currently out and it's ongoing.
Huh.
Wow.
So yeah, it started in 2019.
Yeah.
And it does very much look like the classic Scooby-Doo style.
Yeah, 22-minute episodes. The original voice of Fred and Scooby is still in it. Greg Griffin, who plays Azula in Avatar The Last Airbender, plays Daphne in a lot of stuff. Matthew Lillard, who plays Shaggy in the, live action. And someone who's playing Velma. So
it's fuck you. That is Kate Micucci, and she is actually.
Oh, I know her now. Yeah.
She is okay. a minor celebrity in her own right because she was one of the.
She was in Big Bang Theory, right? One of those episodes.
I mean, I don't know. Probably.
That's what Wikipedia says. No.
We all agree Velma is better than Daphne, right?
I mean, yes, but no.
I like Gray Delisle more.
Yeah, I mean, look, Gray Delisle's voiceover work is unparalleled in, like, every single way. But no, like, Kate Micucci was in Garfunkel and Oates, and she's been in, like, she was
she's in Lego Batman movie.
Yeah, she was in Lego Batman. She was in Steven Universe.
Well, it's a villain. It's a Batman villain.
It's not. I don't think it's Harley Quinn, huh?
No, it's kind of far off.
Yeah.
From Harley
Quinn. Condiment King.
You're close. Close.
Who does she play?
Clayface.
That's fun.
That's cool. Yeah. I dig that. That's good.
Yep.
She was in. She was in Steven Universe. She played. She played Sadie in Steven Universe, and she was in the recent, the most recent season of Infinity Train, where she played.
I like Sadie.
The train.
God, I don't remember the name of the character in Infinity Train, and it's gonna drive me insane.
I gotta watch.
But she
that.
Was also in Close Enough.
And, we're at 30 minutes, by the way, if we want to talk about comic books. There was a lot.
Yeah, before we do, I'm a little
scared. She's in DuckTales. Because... She was Webby Vanderpack. Oh, nice. That's all.
Yay, DuckTales.
Woo!
Thank you. Yeah, so I'll be watching the Scooby-Doo show this week, and hopefully it'll make me happy and remind me of the days of my youth.
Yeah. We should have you on Opinions Are Cheap to talk about Scooby-Doo. I'm going to send Cameron a message right now about that.
Wow. Jean-Luc, as someone who is faithful to this podcast, do you want to talk about a comic?
I would love to talk about a comic.
I would like to clarify that Kate Micucci was not in the most recent season of Infinity Train. That was actually
Emily.
That was Minty Lewis, and I got her confused.
Oh.
But she was in. She was in Steven Universe. I just got her confused with the girl that plays a character in regular show, and she went on to be in Infinity Train.
That's amazing. Also, I'm going to stop talking about Scooby-Doo after this, but Kevin Conroy plays Batman and Bruce Wayne in an episode called What a Night for a Dark Knight, which is a reference to the first Scooby-Doo episode, What a Night for a Knight, and my goodness. Anyway, Jean-Luc.
Speaking of the Dark Knight, there's a new Batman miniseries that launched this week. Batman: The Detective, if I remember correctly, written by Tom Taylor with art by Andy Kubert. So,
yeah,
kind of a, I guess what you would consider an all-star creative team. I feel like
does it suck?
Do you like Andy Kubert?
I don't like Andy Kubert. I mean, this should not come as a shock to anybody. That I don't really like that, like, blocky, like, really broad shoulders art style. I think there's some good stuff here, but, like, some of the pages where he just, where Bruce Wayne just looks like Wolverine, really, were off-putting to me. So I'm not the biggest Andy Kubert fan, but he's definitely, like, I would definitely say he's, like, an all-star artist. Like, people love Andy Kubert. Generally speaking, I think. And I think Tom Taylor has kind of gotten to that point now where he's Deceased was a huge hit and Justice was a huge hit. He's kind of, you know, he's one of the better writers DC has in their stable. And he's, I feel like one of the more well-liked writers, seasoned. Well, and he's also been there for longer than because it's a lot of new creators, and he's one of more recognized.
He is one of the few guys who are still writing. I mean, you have it is a mini series, so he's not writing the main sort of series.
Yeah, but he's writing some he's writing Nightwing, which is
He is doing that. Yeah,
yeah. So he is writing a mainline book, and this is a mini series. I think it's a Black Label series.
It feels like Dark Knight prequel. In some ways.
Oh, you mean Dark Knight Returns prequel?
Yeah, yeah. It's got that vibe. I mean, it's basically it's Batman Bruce Wayne, and he's I can't be in Gotham anymore.
I didn't even fight people. I didn't even think about that because the current Batman status quo is Alfred is dead. He doesn't have access to his fortune anymore. He's basically in the midst of an identity crisis, and yet none of the comics seem interested in that identity crisis except this one. Which was a welcome change of pace for it not just to be window dressing in other books, but for him to actually, you know, feel like there's some attempt to write a Bruce Wayne that is plagued by the tragedy that has been the recent events of the Batman comics. And I think that Tom Taylor writes that pretty well. I think that the method for get it conveying that is kind of hard to stomach since it's a lot of monologuing Yeah. And it's mostly fine. I just would love to have seen some of that come out more in the dialogue, and to devote more page space to him having like those conversations with other people. Or
I had the first few pages for me were really rough, like I checked out kind of thing, and then they brought me back in, and there was some cool stuff between Batman and Knight and Squire, and he beats up a ghost, and I was like, you know, I just kind of smiling at that.
See, the first pages had me because Beryl Hutchinson is there, and I have a really soft spot for Paul Cornell's Knight and Squire miniseries from like 2010. And I was like, oh my god, that's Squire, who's Knight now. But I was really excited. And then the fake out where I thought they killed her, that's where I checked out. I'm like, no.
You killed my favorite character.
He's not my favorite character, but I have a soft spot for that character. But yeah, no, I think that like the opening is rough. Some of the action scenes go on for too long.
Yeah.
Like the hospital. There's a scene in the hospital where he's fighting a bunch of people dressed in white Batman costumes who are like the anti-Batman, I guess.
I really like the concept that comes at the last page and kind of throughout, but basically it starts off and a plane crashes and people die, and you find out that all those people were people that Batman saved. So someone's working to like, hey Batman, you saved people, I'm gonna like undo your life's work. And it's coming at a time where he's like having a crisis of like, hey, I'm not really effective, like, you know, Joker's still around, all these guys are still around, and like my war on crime isn't working. And I just like the idea that there's like a maniacal villain who's like, I'm going to kill everybody you saved.
Yeah.
Hey guys,
what's up?
I have to pee, so if you want to talk about the rest of this and or also was it like Children of whatever, another thing that I didn't read,
sure,
feel free. I will.
She's a really fast peer. We'll just give her like
Chad has witnessed that I can be a very fast peer. I almost said very past peer. If I put my bladder to it. So I will be right back.
Okay.
Okay.
No, I enjoyed this on the whole. I thought that it has its rough spots, but there's enough here that I liked. In terms of like Batman's internal struggle, I also think that the new Squire, who I don't think I've ever seen before, is really fun. I liked the scenes with her, and even though I'm not like a big Andy Kubert fan, I do love that one page of Batman with the trench coat. I thought that was great. I thought that was a really great visual. Visual.
Also some cool Gentleman Ghost where he's a lot more like creature-y and stuff going on.
Yeah.
And he just gets beat up, so yeah.
With the Constantine gloves, yeah, it's great.
A good Batman comic, and Mr. Tom Taylor continues to be one of my favorite writers.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, yeah, I'm interested, I'm excited to see where it goes. I hope it picks up a little bit in the next couple issues, because this issue wasn't all the way there for me. Just because, like I said, I think like a couple of the action scenes go on too long, and it really kind of detracts from some of the character work. So hopefully we get some more of that as the focus going forward. But yeah, I thought this was a pretty solid start to a Batman miniseries.
Yeah.
Alex, did you read Superman number 30?
I was going to, and then I decided not to.
Okay, I assume I'm the only one who read Superman number 30 then.
No, Chad was telling me earlier this week how he quite had thoughts on Superman 30.
Yeah, my thoughts were, I'm not going to read this.
Yep, it's true. That's what he said to me, and I said, good on you.
Okay, I sort of expected that to happen.
I did.
No, I enjoyed Superman number 30. It's like...
Oh, wow.
What do you mean?
No, yeah. I just thought this was like the one picking up from that Action Comics thing that's picking up from that other like.
Well, so that two issue arc was just confusing because it was a two issue arc that took place over two different. It was that was like not super good, but this is actually the same creative team. So I guess I was wrong. I think it might be Action Comics that's picking up a new writer, but this was written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, who wrote that two issues story that I wasn't a huge fan of, but this is like a much more like sci-fi angle on Superman, which is cool. where he like he takes John to this who is now, you know, Teen John, which I still hate that, but takes him to this planet that he saved in the past, and there's like this carcass of a dead god that is like in the center of the planet and emits like evil energies. And they have like a translator chip that they take there, but the language that the natives of the planet speak like words often have multiple different meanings, and phrases have multiple different meanings. And so there's a lot of fun, like language tricks that it plays. Like one of the big twists is centered around, Superman gets like this urgent communication that's like, that tells him one thing, and then something totally different turns out to be true, and it was just like a mistranslation, which I think is a cool plot point to have in a Superman comic. But it was like a really fun like sci-fi story with Superman. I feel like the kind of thing that has always been sort of on the edges, but especially in recent years has felt much more pushed to the side. In terms of like the cosmic side of the DC universe has been way less about Superman and way more about like the Green Lanterns for obvious reasons. But I really liked it. It felt like kind of like a corny, fun sci-fi movie that you would watch and be like, yeah, that's like a fun 3.5-star sci-fi movie, but I'm glad I watched it. I had a good time. And that's like exactly the same feeling I would ascribe to this. And I'm going to keep reading at least through the rest of this arc, I think, which is a good place to be for Superman. Hasn't been the case for a while, but I think that this is a really good pickup for the character.
Yay.
And I guess now that Emily's back, we can talk about the Joker number 2, which I assume everyone else read. But
I'm really glad that Gordon opted to summarize the events of the previous comic, because I did not remember what had happened in the last one.
Really? You didn't remember the woman who told Gordon that billionaires are good guys and the Joker's a bad guy?
Oh, I seriously, okay, I didn't read this one, and I super did not remember that issue either until you just said that.
I mean, that was perhaps the most memorable line of
I was kind of hoping that the handshake thing that you, or like the phone number screenshot, dude, that you sent to the chat was from Tom Taylor's, because then I would have been like, oh, that's hilarious. It's still hilarious. I like it. It's, you know, Commissioner Gordon being like, hey, can I have your number? And they're standing very close to one another. And I'm like,
I do love it.
There's a lot of sexual tension in that panel. True. So the panel we're describing, it's about halfway through the issue. Most of this issue hinges around two conversations, one between Jim Gordon and Batman, where he tells Batman about being approached to go find the Joker, and then one with his daughter Barbara about how this, for the last who knows how long, he's known that she was Batgirl / Oracle.
That was one of my favorite moments, was when he
it's that great he knew
that she was Oracle.
Yeah, it's great. But the specific panel is when he's talking to Batman and he's like, if I'm going to go out of the country to find Joker, I need to be able to reach you. And Batman says, you want my phone number. And Jim Gordon says, you're damn right. And they're like right next to each other. Batman's got like a smirk on his face.
Extremely right next to each other.
Yes, like maybe an inch between their chests.
It is a lot.
It is a fantastic panel. I really dug it. I mean, honestly, I was like really lukewarm on that first issue, but I thought this was a really significant step forward.
I actually liked kind of this second issue. I say hesitantly.
I mean, I'm not even like hesitant about it. Like, there's a lot about it that I really like. There's some of it that I'm. There's some of it I don't like. I don't really like the, like, for obvious reasons, I don't really like the, like, oh, Jim Gordon's the good cop angle, you know?
I mean, sure.
Like that stuff is always frustrating for me, but I'm willing to suspend my disbelief for, you know, Gotham City, I suppose.
It's cool to see, like, a bunch of villains going to kill the Joker, too. Like, there's a sense of, like, it sort of feels like a comic of a bygone era, and it seems, like, there's so much camp in this book. for a book that's you know Jim Gordon be like, I gotta kill the Batman, I gotta do it, but it's also just so zany and silly. There's a guy who's got like half his face like blown off and he's like, get out of my property, Joker, you're being evicted.
I do love the idea that like there are all of the like that the supervillains have sort of wormed their way into, you know, the world of other crime to the extent where they're like staying in the villas meant for like gang lords and drug lords and, you know, genocidal maniacs and that kind of stuff. That is a fun angle. But, you know, for as much of that as there is in this, because like the concept is kind of goofy, I actually thought that there was like a lot of really like especially the last half of the book that is like Barbara and Jim's having like their conversation after, you know,
yeah.
Jim let, like I thought that a lot of that was like really good, like father daughter stuff that really felt like it heightened the stakes of like what he's about to embark on. Because obviously there's a lot of personal stakes, but those are like largely external to what's actually happening in this book. But I think that that's a relationship that, despite being like a very obvious relationship, is not something that we see very often, like the Jim and Barbara relationship. And so I think like Tinian has like a really good handle on what that would look like and does a really, really, really good job like establishing those personal emotional stakes. I even think that it's a very different tone, but Batman being in Jim Gordon's apartment and talking through it all is also a really good conversation where it's this like constant, like they're talking about the mission and like, you know, the morality of like killing the Joker and like the logistics and how Batman can help him. But there's like the constant undercurrent. And I mean, we talked about that one panel, obviously, but there's like, even in throughout that conversation, there's like this undercurrent of, you know, these are two people who are like so absorbed in their own like masculinity that they can't just like tell each other that, you know, Batman can't just be like, okay, I hope that you're safe while you're doing this. And I like that aspect of it as well. I don't necessarily know if that's 100% intentional, but I really liked it. And yeah, I don't know. I dug this issue a lot more than I expected to after not really liking the first one a whole lot. The reveal at the end that like that he was hired by the Court of Owls is whatever. Don't really give a shit about that. I mean, it's cool. When I saw it, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. But like, it's not, you know.
I liked that the Court of Owls was going to be a part of this because I just thought that that was kind of neat. But
that was like a cool twist.
I like that the Court of Owls are also like, God, we gotta fucking get rid of this fucking clown, man.
I just kind of like, oh, like these guys are involved too. Like,
yeah,
that was kind of fun.
But no, that definitely plays into like what Alex was saying earlier about the like, oh, it's a race between all of these different factions to find the Joker.
Exactly.
Like, I like that sort of like kind of like silliness to it. But what there was those two sort of conversations, like the Jim Gordon, Batman. Jim Gordon, Barbara Gordon, that like really stood out to me as like this issue's strengths. And Gillam March is a fantastic artist. I mean, that panel is great that we talked about. There's a lot of really good panels. I love what he does with Batman's eyes throughout the issue where, you know, Batman is like weirdly emotive throughout that conversation, which I think is fantastic and a lot of fun to look at.
He's an artist that I'm normally not too high on, and whenever I think of him, I think of that one Catwoman issue from the New 52, where Batman and Catwoman have sex with their costumes on.
To be fair, that's not really his fault.
I think about that one for a while, too.
I just think that's... Yeah, right? Yeah, see? But but I feel like sometimes he has trouble with like faces and body proportions and stuff like that, but I think it's been working so far in this series.
Sure. Yeah, it has been. I also think that it works in Carmen, which he also writes and draws.
I like this issue of Carmen.
I did too.
Yeah.
I think that one of
I'm shocked you liked it, Chad.
Yeah, I would love to hear Chad's feelings on it, but what I will say for me is that I feel like the strongest aspect of this comic is that a majority of it was not dialogue. I know that know that it's being translated into English, and I know that that can lead to like some clunkier understandings, but like, I just really like, I felt like this comic really shone when you are just looking at the visuals and not having to worry about some of the dialogue.
Yeah, I love seeing some titties in my comics.
I great. Was not speaking of the titties, but let it be known that the titties were good.
Yeah. No. I do agree with you. And I really am interested to hear that Chad liked this. But I do also just want to echo that I fucking love the first like half or so of this comic where she's just
flying so good. The city just
and looking at the architecture, it's absolutely gorgeous. And like it's gorgeous. Cast in like the sort of like twilight, or not twilight, but like as like during the sunset or the sunrise. I can't really tell which, but it's like the pink sky. It looks
so good.
Beautiful. Yeah. Anyway, Chad,
this
I'm
kind of surprised. Everyone's surprised. Like this comic, like the first half of it is just like really chill, and the artwork's really good. And you're like, oh man, this lady's just flying around, observing stuff.
You have a low tolerance for certain things.
I suppose, but like I enjoy it. I'm just like, man, there's like a lot of really good artwork here. It says a lot about her character, what she's like looking at and fixating on. Because she's a flawed person, while she's a flawed ghost. And then it, all of a sudden we're on a plane now, and like this guy's talking to the Grim Reaper lady. You're like, well, he's fucking dead. So we know where this is going. But then like he falls out of the goddamn plane, and he's just surrounded by floating dead people. They're like heading to the sun or something. And you're like, what the fuck is going on? And everything is really pretty, but this is super dark, and you're getting this like juxtaposition of like, this is cool. This is fucked up. This is cool. This is fucked up. What's going to happen next? And then it's just like this really like character driven piece where the ghost wants to kill herself because she still doesn't realize she's a ghost. Yeah, this is a really good issue. There's a lot of good shit in here.
I really expected you to like come back and tell us about how up its ass you thought this issue was.
I mean, but it's up its ass, but I feel like it deserves, you know, a finger up there.
Yeah, a little poke around a little bit. Yeah. No, I'm glad you like it, because I feel very similarly about like the latter half of this issue.
Yeah.
And like the character drama. Even though like it does, like you can tell that it's being translated, because there's some stuff that like feels like it wasn't translated perfectly. It's a little clunky, but yeah, I do love that character stuff at the end where she like sees more of her past with that, with what's his name, Cisco, I think is the name of her friend, and there's a lot of really good stuff there with her, like, and also like the Grim Reaper telling her like, you are a self-obsessed narcissist.
Yeah, that was good.
Like that shit was really good, that like yeah, you've got you're obviously fucked up, and like there are a lot of things, like, yes, like there's a lot wrong with you. Not, well, not wrong with you, but like, there, you know, like, you
have there's a lot of to issues there.
But like, also, you're an asshole for this. You're not the good guy for, you know, getting pissed that your best friend is sleeping with your roommate. Like, that's fine. I dug it a lot. I thought I've really enjoyed this so far.
I like the depiction of the Grim Reaper in this. Like, I think she's there's something really like stylish and weird and dark, but also kind of cool and sympathetic. Like all the things you want in a depiction of the Grim Reaper. Like, it's really well done. I love the costume. It's like, it's striking, and it's just a little fucked up. Like, there's a lot of good stuff going on. Yay.
Yeah.
No, I'm really glad that this is getting reprinted in English, because this is definitely something that, like, had it only ever been published in, I think Spanish is the original language it was published in.
Yeah, I also think it's Spanish.
I could be wrong about that. It would, like, this is the kind of thing that, like, I would have gone my whole life never knowing this existed, and that would have been kind of sad, because it's a it's really up my alley. So
hey everyone, you only live once, and Spanish is Españolo. Wait, I think I did that wrong. Did I do that wrong?
What?
I mean, like, technically, I feel like you...
Did I do it right?
You did it right for an English-speaking audience, but...
Yay, we did it.
You guys groaned, and I was like, I said that out loud. And I was like, I think that's wrong, but it must have worked because they're bad at me.
It's Espanol and then YOLO.
Yeah, okay, I did it. Okay, good.
Espanolo. Okay, yeah,
I got the joke.
John got the joke. He just didn't like it.
I am aggressively white, everybody. like computer paper white.
Yeah, well, you should get a tan.
We are all white.
It's true.
I like that. Mm. I should text that to Heather.
Well. Oh, okay.
Holy fuck, we're at 55 minutes. There's like 8 million comics left to go.
We're about to talk about Wonder Woman number 771.
My favorite comic of the week.
I didn't read this.
I didn't either.
Oh, Dr. Psycho is in it.
Guys,
tell me about it. I didn't read it.
Is this actually your favorite comic of the week, Alex?
I actually really liked it. I did.
Yeah. Oh, I dug this issue a lot, too.
When I was putting together my list of comics, I just didn't prioritize this one.
Oh, please. I think going forward, you should.
Okay, tell me about it and tell me why.
It's just telling a really cool, like, Wonder Woman story steeped in, like, mythology and gods, but in a way that's kind of different than normal, and there's an adorable talking squirrel in it.
Oh, and fuck, we were reading this.
Yes, you guys both liked the first issue.
Yeah, okay, now that you mention it, I do remember that I liked it. I was putting together the list of things to read this week, and I saw that, and for some reason it just didn't
If happen. I need to start, like, adding notes to the list of comics that I'm gonna read with, like,
yeah, honestly,
Emily, Chad, you liked this
one. Actually, if it comes to, like, things that we have only read one issue of, like, saying you guys liked this one would not be a bad note.
Yeah, I'd be super down for that. I didn't read a bunch of shit this week.
Because you can't just say, like, read Batman number 761. You guys liked this one.
Doesn't sound like us.
That doesn't. Yeah, that, I don't think you would like Batman number 761.
So, like, if you make a little note that reminds us that we liked whatever the new creative team was doing.
Well, going forward, we'll do that because you guys should read this issue. You guys should read this issue of Wonder Woman because I think it's probably should have.
I will.
It's really strong. Eventually. It has when the next issue comes out.
Yeah.
It has. Big, like, adventure movie vibes, which is a blast.
I'm down with this.
Like, it just has that, like, classic, like, you know, not like one to one, but, like, feels kind of like the Indiana Jones.
That's what I was thinking. That's structure. What I was just thinking in my head.
Yeah, where it's like going from, like, doing, like, these wild tasks, going from point A to point B. And, like, doing, like, task after task, and there's, like, this mystery that's slowly unraveling in the background where she doesn't quite remember who she is, but she, like, and she has, like, a moment where she, like, recognizes Dr. Psycho, and she can't 100% put it together, so there's a lasso nearby that's not her lasso, but she thinks he's lying to her, and she, like, has an instinct that if she ties him up in the lasso, then she can compel him to tell the truth. And it's really good. Like, there's a lot of, like, really, like, good, like, what I would describe as, like, comic booky moments in it, like, that are, like, played totally straight, and written well. So it, like, actually feels like kind of like the fun, you know, like the fun, like, lighthearted, light spirited kind of, like, superhero comics that I really enjoy.
And it's got like really gorgeous art, and there is like an overarching, like, sense of, like, okay, well, there are bad things happening. There's this mystery wonder, like, that there are stakes, but it's such a straightforward sort of, like, quest that she's going on to go point A to point B, and there's answers here, but the answer she gets, maybe, you know, like, they don't solve it and they make things more difficult. And yeah,
she's all fucked up because her friend Siegfried is still gone, and Thor's an asshole.
Thor won't do anything
about it. I love Thor in this, that he is just, like, the most useless piece of shit, that he just, like, all he wants to do is drink and fight and fuck. And
oh, so they stole that from that Billy and Mandy episode too.
Yeah, the person who liked this liked Billy and Mandy.
But, I guess. I've never seen Billy and Mandy.
Oh, that's a shame.
Fuck you.
Guys, I had a realization.
Now you sound like Thor.
What's that?
My realization was that there have been a lot of comics lately that are trying to, like, issue numbers and are going with, like, for example, The Joker or whatever, like going with a more, like, I don't know, like, non-subtitled name to try to get people to read the comics. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, how, like, the new Resident Evil movies don't want to be called, like, Resident Evil 10. They want to be called, like, The Resident Evil or whatever. Like,
Yeah, sure.
Okay, yes. There's been a trend of this in comics, and I get the impulse because, like, there are a lot of people that, because of, like, movies and TV shows, they want to try to get into comics, but reading about characters is so fucking difficult because, like, trying to parse through the history of popular characters can be really difficult. But, like, I kind of see where the impulse to just retitle things as The Joker, The Batman, or whatever is coming from, because I also, when I see, like, Wonder Woman issue 376, like,
771.
Well, I mean, I was just pulling a
number. Too high. Too damn high.
I was pulling a number out of my ass. But, like, when I see, like, Wonder Woman whatever number, like, I don't necessarily feel like I want to tap into that as a new reader. Like, no. I know that in this case, you guys, we've previously talked about how, like, this is a new creative team or whatever, so we read the previous issue, but, like, I don't know, when it comes to, like, a big number, like,
I can't lie to you, I'm a sucker for the big numbers. I think that all of the characters should go back to their original number.
I mean, look, like, I'm not gonna 100%. Lie, I feel like going back to the big number is not a bad thing, because I feel like that would help contextualize things that are going on, or at least, like, I don't know, make it less hard to find things.
It's also, like, such a myth that, like, in order to get into superhero comics, you have to, like, know the whole history of the character.
I mean,
like,
yeah.
It's just the fault of pure curation on the parts of, like, the two major publishers, that they're not just, like, that they don't just, like, constantly publish articles. Like, here's a good jumping on point. Read this.
Yes.
Read this.
Like, I agree with you. I feel like there should be more of, like, it's gonna be, like, issue number 760 and it's gonna be a new creative team where you can just jump on and not necessarily have to worry about everything that has come before or whatever, I feel like there should be some way to
delineate that. And that's something that, I mean, comics have had this thing where, like, they reboot every year because they're like, oh no, people aren't gonna buy 637. And they've also tried doing a thing where, like, hey, it's 637, but on the cover it's like like start of a new arc, or like one out of six of an arc. And
see, actually, I kind of don't mind the idea of, like, number one out of an arc or whatever. Like,
yeah, like, I'd be down for that.
If it's gonna be like Batman number 370, but you can label it like part one of 10 or whatever of an arc, like, I think that that's good. I think that that's a way to, like, make you feel less like you're just sort of diving in the middle of something that you don't understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Wonder Woman number 770 has a new Odyssey starts here in big text on the cover.
That's so. Fair. I just didn't look at it. So yeah, that's on
comics
me.
Comics fly all the time.
But also, you'd, like, you'd have to like see it in a store. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I like the original numbering. I think that like, I think it's more confusing when there are a bunch of series with the same name.
I also agree with that. Just, like, I just think that there should be like a... like a sub numbering system where you can where you can indicate to people that like a new arc has started so that they could theoretically, if like someone is at their comic book store and they want to jump into Wonder Woman but they don't really know what's going on, they could be like, oh, like this is a new arc and it's number 2 of 6 or whatever, and they could just like go and get the first couple comics of that arc or whatever.
That's true. Yeah, no, that'd be cool. You could also go to your comic book store and jump into something totally new, like Home Number 1, which came out this week from Image
Can
Comics.
I tell you guys my reaction to Home Number 1, which was...
Oh, yeah.
What were you going to say, John?
No, go ahead. I go ahead, yes.
So all I knew about this comic going in was that it was on the list of things to read this week, and I, at a certain point, thought that this was just going to be a straightforward comic about, like, the concentration camps in America, essentially.
Oh, it's an Image Number 1. Why would you think that?
I just... It didn't occur to me that this might be anything else. So that when
how naive you are,
the little boy started having superpowers, I was actually genuinely shocked. Like, I was exactly as shocked as the other people in this comic.
You know, that is adorable. It's adorable that this comic had that effect on one person.
I didn't even know, like,
the only person who read an Image Number 1 and didn't go in waiting for the page 22 supernatural reveal.
I was like, oh, they're just in a 5-issue miniseries. And then he got powers, and I'm like, oh.
Oh, come on. How did you get baited? You've read so many of these.
I don't know. I was like, oh, like, all right, this is...
The fucked up thing is, like, I was like, you know... this is pretty good for what it's trying to do, and it's actually being serious. I can't wait. When are they going to fuck it up with a superhero reveal? And, like, I was so waiting for it. It's like, wow, they're taking forever to give him superpowers. This is kind of fucked up. Maybe I'm just wrong, and I'm just wasting this issue. And, like, 18 pages in. And I was like, there it is. We did it.
Yeah.
We fucking did it.
I just didn't really pay that much attention. I just knew that this was a comic I needed to read. And... there was a long moment where I was just like, oh, this is just a really sad comic about, like, the state of immigration. And I was okay with that. And then, like, the little boy gets superpowers.
To be fair, I don't think the little boy getting superpowers at the end detracts from the stuff that comes before.
No, not at all.
But also, I let out a really big groan when I was like, oh, fucking hell, there it is. There it is. It's either there's a demon or there's superpowers. Anytime you're reading what feels like a slice of life, not a slice of life, but like slice of life or like realistic fiction from Image, you're like, damn, this is so good. And then Dan is like, and there was a demon in the closet the whole time. Is that shocking? And you roll your eyes and go, no, that hasn't been shocking for like 10 years. But I don't know. I thought this was like a solid first issue. I think that it seemed, from my perspective, it handles like the, you know, rancid state of immigration in the United States as like pretty well.
Yeah.
I think there are some lines of dialogue that seem out of step with reality to me. Like the part where the mom is like, we're going to America. They're going to let us in. And the people are like, oh, didn't you hear? Trump just got into office and now everything is different. the implication being that, like, immigration was hunky-dory before. You could waltz across the border and be treated like an American.
Yeah,
right off the
I
bat.
Mean, like, which I kind of get that, but
which
also...
Which is kind of ahistorical.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't really enjoy this book.
Yeah.
Because it was like, it was such a like, oh my god, life was perfect before Trump moved in, and as soon as he got in, everything went to shit. And I'm like, it was just a thing where I was like, it was enough to get me, like, check out, and maybe that's why I missed the superhero reveal that came up, but... I don't know.
No, obviously, the state of immigration and, like, the specifically the state of those concentration camps and the child separation policy became a lot worse and more inhumane under Trump. But, like, it was one of those things where, like, the whole time I was like, you can't tell this story in that, like, with that without that context,
yeah.
Right? You, like, because, like, you can't tell this story as, like, you know, things are gonna, like, of, like, things are gonna be great when we get there until the bad Cheeto man interrupted it all. And that's kind of what this book feels like to me, where it's, like, it is reckoning with the very real, like, the very horrific treatment of immigrants at the border and the detaining them in concentration camps, separating families, like... Very clearly implies that there was going to be like some kind of sexual assault happening in this book, to the kid, and like is very honest in its depiction of that. It's just that like it sets the table without like any like historical context.
My God, we're still recording. We're at an hour and 11.
And we have a lot of comics to talk about.
That's why we're on Zencaster, don't worry.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know. I thought this was okay overall, but it just, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of derailed the whole thing for me. It was just like, okay.
No,
yeah.
that's fair. I mean, it was like one of those things that was like in the back of my mind the whole time, and it didn't fully derail it, but it was kind of tough at times.
Yeah. It was
yeah.
It was a difficult comic to read in the like magical powers notwithstanding, like
right.
Just the parts of it that were just really real,
yeah,
were pretty difficult to read.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
Can we talk about how Homesick Pilot sucks now?
It do be that way.
Yeah, go for it.
Don't think it be like
what,
that.
What if all the fun stuff in this comic was like, hey, actually, there's a cabal of like supernatural shit, and people get. I'm trying to remember actually what happened because I read this on Monday, and I was like, man, fucking Homesick Pilot sucks now, and I don't remember why it sucks.
Did that even come out this week?
Yes,
I did not read a new issue of that this week.
Yeah, issue 5 did.
Don't.
Oh, and then it, like, flashes forward and someone's controlling, like, a ghost-powered mech now or something, which is dumb as shit. Fuck this comic.
Yeah, there's, like, a mini, like, sort of kaiju battle in it between, like, supernatural forces going on.
Also dumb.
In the last page. Yeah, but it's dumb without, like, but it takes it so seriously, right? That there's not, like, I feel like that could have been a fun concept that they're bringing in, but... I don't even remember what the first issue was that I liked it so much. I think it was just like kids hanging out. There was music going on. They went to a show and then the house was haunted and stuff. So,
yeah, it was great. Like, it's like, hey, what if like guys in a you know, kind of a shitty metal band having fun visited a haunted house? And it's like, hell yeah, this is the best thing ever. And it's like, what if one of them gets superpowers and is kind of a ghost? It's like, oh, we can do it. This is kind of cool. And it's like, what if all garbage from now here on out? And it's like, oh. Well, I guess we could do that. I mean, I'm not going to read any more of it, but sure. Good job, everybody. I don't like it.
Well, I'll endeavor to read it at some point, but that does not sound like a very positive. It's not a glowing review.
Also, if we're on Image, because there's one left. How far did you guys get into the Lighthouse number one?
I didn't read it because you said it was bad.
Yarr. Chad acted like a real lighthouse keeper, shining on the boats to make sure they don't go anywhere near this crappy comic.
That was good. I like that, Alex.
I also didn't read it, so.
I looked at some of the art, and it looked like shitty CG renders from a PS2 game. And
PS2 games do not look this good, you bastard. That console looks like shit.
That combined with Chad saying that he didn't make it past issue 7, maybe not read it.
This comic fucking sucks.
I'll trust Chad.
This is like, I made like 8 pages in before I was like, fuck this shit, I am not doing another 40. But it's like the shitty kind of sci-fi. Like, oh, okay, everything's really bad, but like, okay, look, the crux is like, there's this weird part of space where it's like black holes, and ships fly through the black holes, or they don't want to get near them because they're dangerous. So there's a lighthouse here to tell the ships to go away from the black holes. It's like, all of that would be done on the computer. Literally all of it. And they make a reference, like, I mean, all of our stuff is automated. We're just kind of here. But if something happened, we have to be the backup. And it's like, no, there'd be robots. That's how space and sci-fi works. None of this makes any sense. And then the art sucks and the dialogue is garbage. Fuck this comic.
What if I told you there was a robot in the comic?
There is, and he's like, I spoke facts. I'm like, oh, you cute little robot shooting facts about pop culture from the 21st century. Knowing what trip-hop music is or whatever the fucking reference was. Fuck, this comic is bad. It is awful. It is super bad.
Well.
But then came
along. I'm glad I didn't read it.
Grant Morrison, and he can write a book.
What Grant Morrison put out?
Proctor Valley Road number 2.
Oh, yeah, I read that. That was good. Yeah. I forgot that was him.
Hell yeah. Proctor Valley Road number 2 fucking slapped. How did you forget about
no,
this
No, I literally read it like 2 hours ago, and I was like, oh, man, a young adult book where the dialogue isn't written like shit.
I don't believe it.
Imagine that.
There it was.
Though I'm glad that you guys brought up Proctor Valley Road as the next comic, because that was the one that was on my brain as the next comic to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's also the last comic, so.
Okay. Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I like Proctor Valley Road. Like, I like all the characters, and I like kind of getting a better sense of their home lives, and I like getting a better sense of the setting that they are in. But I'm also interested in, like, whatever the big, I was going to say ghost story. I don't know that that's necessarily.
There's a demon.
Sure.
Yar.
But you know what I mean.
It's like an Image comic in that way. Sure. There's a supernatural twist to it.
I'm interested in finding out where the supernatural twist goes.
I trust it. That is the thing. The writing is good enough. I'm like, you know what? It's going to go in a cool place because the dialogue's good. I really like the characters.
Yeah, I like the characters.
It's going to go well. Like, I trust you, Grant Morrison, if that is your real name.
It is their name. I'm pretty sure.
I think so.
I think so. He's they're Scottish.
Yeah, I think
Grant Morrison is their name.
Grant Morrison. Yes.
They've been going by Grant Morrison for a long time, so it would be kind of weird if it turned out to not be their name.
I'd kind of dig it, but like, it's all of these characters are so enjoyable, and they all get their little like. Not much has happened in this book. I mean, a lot has happened with like the big, you know, supernatural stuff going on. Mm-hmm. But I just love these people interacting with the people around them, and they're just, it's just like young adult writing can be good. And
I really just love these kids.
Yeah. And it's 2 issues in. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm also really digging this. I love the way that it uses like the time period and the setting too, like where it actually feels consequential because they think that, they think that the kids were helping draft dodgers, people like trying to get out of the Vietnam War getaway, and like that is a very fun use of the setting, which, you know, that'd also be cool if that's just what they were doing, which it's not. But I like the part where the one girl goes into the desert with a gun and is just like, I'm gonna find out what's happening and I have a gun. It's like, you're sweetie, you're 12. Go home. But she's so excited about it.
It's great. I would describe this, like, and I mean this in the best way possible, is very Stephen King, like how these characters are written, as far as like, they're kids and they're kind of doing stuff that like maybe kids wouldn't do, but I also believe it because like the way they're approaching it feels like how a kid would approach a situation. It's like the mistakes that are made are so believable, and it's like, please don't do that. Okay, you're gonna do it. I guess I'm gonna follow you. Like, we're gonna do this together. Like, I will watch, and I hope you don't die, and I'm gonna be very excited when you don't.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it's definitely like a little bit more lighthearted, I think, but yeah, I think that is a really good summation of this book.
It's fantastic.
I'm really digging it. You'll also soon be able to watch it on television, because as I found out this week, before the comic even came out, it was put into the TV show adaptation.
I didn't know that.
Is it co-written by the showrunner?
It's co-written by Alex Child, yeah, who is a TV writer. From what I looked at, I think it seems like he's a TV writer, and he's working on the show.
I didn't know that.
So you'll be able to watch it soon. But honestly, you should just read the comic, because the comic's really fucking good. And I don't see, like, yeah, the comic's really good. And it looks gorgeous. I think that the book, like, the art is fantastic. It's like very much in that sort of boombox style. But I love the last panel. I love some of the art that's going on here as well. I think it just looks fantastic. So I much prefer this to live action than actors.
For sure. No, comics are rad. And like, this year has been a great start for comics so far. Like, there have been so many great series that have been going on. And you know, even stuff from like, I mean, DC, we always read DC, but whether we like DC. Yeah, I think the only DC comic we collectively liked last year was Wonder Woman Dead Earth. And there's like better ones coming out this year. And there's a Marvel comic we're enjoying, Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
Makes me happy.
Man, it's so fucked up. Like, I was talking, and we can end the show in the next couple minutes because we're, you know, pushing an hour 30. But I was talking about this with Alex earlier this week, where, like, usually, you know, there are weeks in the year where we read a lot of comics. And it feels like every week this year has been like that, at least for me. But the reason for that is because I'm not reading DC number ones and being like, this shit sucks, and dropping them. I'm reading DC number ones and being like, this is good. Like, it's good. And then sticking with it for, like, you know, most of these are only on like their second or third issue, but like, it's been a while since I've made it to the second or third issue of multiple DC comics at once, you know? And it's a good feeling. I like it when comics are good, when they're good canics.
Yeah,
you are.
All right. Well, we should wrap it up. Unless anyone has any final thoughts.
Nope. Let's fuck off.
Leave people with. Cool. Well, we will go about enjoying our Friday nights. Listeners, you should go about enjoying the rest of your day. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, social medias, you know, the Comics Podcast on all those places. Individually, we are at Alex Hanziak for Alex Hanziak, at M Pandanata. That's Emily.
That's me.
The next two are a little more esoteric. There's at Inonimband.
Yay.
That's me.
Hey, fuck
and
you.
And there's at Mountain Dew Liker. That's Chad. Also
Jean. No, I am not. How dare you insufferable.
Flip those around. I'm Mountain Dew Liker, Chad's Anonymous.
Am I Empanadata?
That's me.
Everyone wants to be Empanadata because she's like the only good Twitter person here.
Aw, thank you.
I'm great on Twitter.
You suck on Twitter. I wrote a tweet twice today, and then I deleted it both times, and I'm like, I don't want to tweet.
Also, yeah. I want to plug something.
It's a good impulse, chat, or good impulse, Alex.
If my Little Pony Warhammer crossover fanfic is done and up. So if you go to femfiction.net and type in My Little Warhammer, put quotes around it or it's not going to show up. But it's wow. My Little Warhammer Friendship is WAG. So the whole thing is up. It's four chapters, but they're titled lessons because I'm cute that way. And you can read it, and it's stupid as fuck, but people seem to be liking it.
Hell yeah. You should read it.
I'm going to read some of it.
And you should check out the Warrior Cats podcast that Chad and Emily did.
Yes.
That is going to be in the feed right before this.
Yep.
So it came out. I listened to it today.
If you are listening to this, you can hear the Warrior Cats episode.
It's a good episode.
John Luke, what did you think of the Warrior Cats episode?
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I learned some things about warrior cats I didn't know before, which is everything. Because I didn't know anything about warrior cats. And then I forgot everything that I learned about warrior cats.
Valid. Yeah.
And if there's another one, I'll listen to it, and it might jog my memory.
One day, Chad will be strong enough to do a part two of Warrior Cats podcast.
Today is not that day.
It's not.
And that's okay.
Yep. I was promised May, so look for the follow-up episode in May. But until then, there will be more episodes of the Comics Podcast, and I will leave you with that thought.
Ruh-roh.
You guys can say bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Nice. Wow, that clipped the shit out of the mic.
It was good.
It really did.
I hope I'm not editing.